As the weather starts to cool down, I'm really excited about everything this season brings. New opportunities, fresh goals, and yes, even the wardrobe change. I love the feeling of shifting gears as fall kicks in, whether it's in business or life. So as we all make the transition, I hope you're as excited as I am to embrace the season with a new perspective and maybe a few wardrobe upgrades from Quince. Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. And they partner with them directly, cutting out the cost of the middleman and passing the savings on to you. I recently picked up their Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater and an incredible performance chino pants, and they've quickly become go-to staples for me. As someone who's constantly traveling for speaking engagements or business meetings, I need clothes that not only look great, but also feel amazing. And these pieces absolutely deliver. Upgrade your wardrobe with pieces made to last with Quince. Go to quince.com/playbook for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince. quince.com/playbook to get free shipping and a 365-day returns. quince.com/playbook.
What's up, Wealth Builders? Today, I've got David Meltzer on the show, and we're going to talk about how you can actually buy a community and use it to leverage your business, other people's brands, and everything else. Because let me tell you, building a community is a lot of work, I would know. So, Dave, what's up, man?
That's why I wanted to come here, because if anybody would know how expensive and competitive it is to build a community,
yeah,
it'd be you. And we've been blessed to be friends from when we both started to build a community. And I'm sure millions of dollars later, we see that it's only getting more difficult and more expensive to do so.
Absolutely. Well, I see a lot of people now talking about starting communities, building communities, whether they're paid, whether they're free. And I think it's a great thing to do to get a group of like-minded people together that you can do business with, do life with. And, you know, I think as humans, we are built for community. But let's talk about it from a business standpoint, right? I've built a community. I've built a brand. You know, our community is called Wealthy University. Anyone can join it. You're going a different route. You've bought the rights to like Napoleon Hill's name. Like, how does that work? And now you're building one through him.
Yeah,
tell me about this.
Well, first of all, I built a community like you the old fashioned way, doing a ton of content, events. I probably do more free content than anyone. And it's nice to see that my mentor, Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, kind of swung around. I just saw a video of his saying you got to post at least 15 times a day because it's consumer centric, not content creator centric. And people think that the analytics and everything works in favor of the content creator, or I call them content captures, because let's be honest, you and I, we know how to capture content. It's everyone else that's creating the content from what we're capturing. But after spending millions of dollars and doing literally, I think Playbook, I've done 1950 episodes. Just the playbook. We've done 4,300 interviews on Office Hours, TV show, digital, et cetera. That's a ton of content besides going live every day on Instagram. But more importantly, I started to realize that I know my community like you know yours.
Yeah.
And high net wealth, middle-aged men and women aren't necessarily as much on TikTok and Instagram, more on YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. But even at that, it's very expensive and difficult, the amount of time and money that it takes for me to accumulate a community. So I looked for different brands that were underutilized that already had a community, some that were built over 100 years ago, underutilized in digital side of things, underutilized just with the amount of resources that they're putting into it. My first thought was Wayne Dyer. Dr. Wayne Dyer was a mentor of mine, passed away, and all of his amazing content, Hay House, Louise Hayes, they've kind of dropped off the face. They sold to Random House. So now it's this subsidiary type of platform and community. But it was once again actually reinforcing the fact that that's not where I want to go, because David Meltzer is more like Wayne Dyer. That Dave Meltzer, when Dave Meltzer dies, will be very difficult to maintain the inertia, because Dave Meltzer does so much like Ryan Pineda does every day. What happens when Dave Meltzer is not there doing and staying relevant, and you have to every day. So I started looking at bigger things, and the biggest one I could think of, the most impactful one beyond the Bible,
there we go,
was the entrepreneurial Bible, which was Think and Grow Rich. More middle-aged men and women will tell you, executives of Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, that Think and Grow Rich changed their life when they read it. And Napoleon Hill is that legacy brand that is already a community of millions of people around the world, well-known, and the community exists already. So I decided to bring my value and license it so that I can use Napoleon Hill Institute, Napoleon Hill TV, Napoleon Hill Venture, Napoleon Hill Certified Coaches, Napoleon Hill Podcast, Napoleon Hill Book List and Talent and Search. And that's going to live far beyond David Meltzer, because Napoleon Hill already has lived beyond Napoleon Hill. He died in 1970. He launched Outwitting the Devil in 2011 with Sharon Lecter, 40 years after he died, and the thing was an international success, millions of dollars. And I also get to raise money for the foundation as well.
So explain to me how this works, right? Like, you just rattled off like 12 things like Napoleon Hill does, his organization does. But I don't know. In practical terms, tell me like what you plan to do with the rights to his likeness.
So right now, they don't do any of that stuff in the corporate realm. And so they sought me out as well for someone that could build the brand in a different way for what's going on today. So they don't have Napoleon Hill Venture. They do coaching, and they have the book for the foundation. So now I have licensed the rights to the content in the curriculum of Napoleon Hill, the name, likeness, and image of Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich, and other content, in order to facilitate the leveraging of what already is a huge community that is literally exactly aligned with who I want to build. And so now I have an automatic access, whether it's the SEO, the contacts, the brand itself, and I can rejuvenate the lessons of Napoleon Hill, which went far beyond. They're almost infinite, not quite as powerful and infinite as the Bible, but when it comes to the corporate world, it is one of the Bibles, Think and Grow Rich, and Napoleon Hill's philosophies and strategies. So what I'm going to do is white label. I might come to Ryan Pineda and say, hey, let's do Napoleon Institute Mortgage or Wealthy Way Program or the Kingdom Knights Program under this umbrella of the Napoleon Hill Institute, and giving you leverage to say, look, I'm going to now allow people that search Napoleon Hill to be offered the Ryan Pineda program under Napoleon Hill.
Got it. So let's just say, I mean, I'm just trying to think from how I would do this. So let's say I'm holding a wealth con, and, you know, I could be like, this is a partnership between Napoleon Hill Foundation and Ryan Pineda to bring you, and maybe it's just this whole new event, right? The Think and Grow Wealthy.
Right. Now you're nailing it. And we could do workshops and utilize the curriculum that's already exists, but elevate it.
And
to
you could do it with me, because you're a licensee.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah. And then, you know, we're going to white label. We already have a $200 million fund that now has more credibility because it's the Napoleon Hill Venture Fund, which is much more recognizable than the two partners' names in the fund.
Yeah.
And so now when people are searching in the venture world and they see Napoleon Hill, it also had one other attribute that I started looking at. I come from the corporate world initially, and there's a cover your ass philosophy in the Fortune 5000, let alone the Fortune 500. What do I mean by that? If David Meltzer is a corporate consultant, which I do, well, a power sponsor, an executive, a vice president, or even a CMO takes it up to the board and says, hey, this guy wants to charge us $50,000 a month to be a consultant for whatever solution it is that I think I have expertise at. Well, there's a lot of skepticism about who the hell's David Meltzer, one. And two, if it fails, it's your ass. Compared to taking it to a board or to the executives and saying, hey, we're going to hire Napoleon Hill corporate certified coaches or consultants in order to facilitate, you know, training the sales force or human resources or, you know, engagement of employees, productivity, whatever things that I do as a corporate consultant. Well, you now have a brand that creates less of a risk to the people that make the decision because it's backed by, well, we hired Pepsi, you know, we hired Napoleon Hill compared to David Meltzer or Ryan Pineda.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're basically able to leverage his brand, leverage his content, and create events and other things with it. I guess my next question is, I mean, obviously he doesn't have any new content coming out. Like, right. It's done.
Yep.
So it's just figuring out new ways to repackage what he has.
Well, creating our own content under that umbrella. So you said it, right? Like, Think and Grow Wealthy.
Yeah.
By David Meltzer and Ryan Pineda. Think and Grow Wealthy events. We have a variety of different things where there's content like that. He did nothing on IPOs, right? So you could imagine, right? Think and Grow Rich, colon, taking your company public. And so we're integrating.
You would be able to write a book like with that title and everything?
Yeah. And we would use the principles of Napoleon Hill, approved by the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And by the way, a portion of every bit of revenue goes to the Napoleon Hill Foundation as well to support and grow the foundation so that we're providing not only an elevation of the brand and community and modernizing what Napoleon Hill and the principles that were from 1938, but also providing an elevation of the digital side of what's going on. Because it's, you know, for me, ludicrous that you and I have more followers than Napoleon Hill Institute, Napoleon Hill Foundation.
So with that being said, do they, like, I would imagine they'd have to approve anything like that.
Right. So we have an approval process in place in order to effectuate what content is approved and what programs are approved.
What events.
But I've, right. That. And I've already, though, approved categories of events and things that actually would allow me to do Think and Grow Wealthy as an event with someone like you.
Yeah.
And so luckily it's very nimble. Don Green and I, the president of the Napoleon Hill Foundation and the head of the Napoleon Hill Institute, already have a procedure in place in order to quickly facilitate a turnaround, which, by the way, I learned in sports. You'll like this, Ryan. So there's certain brands in sports, you know, things evolve and we've talked about divine detours.
Yep.
So one of the things I learned when I ran Sports One Marketing with Warren Moon, the Hall of Fame quarterback, and Lee Steinberg, the sports agency, was that dealing with the NFL, for example, or MLB is a beast.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you know a little bit about the MLB, being a professional baseball player yourself, but so many people would come to me and say, Dave, I want to deal with MLB. That would literally take years and millions of dollars. Same thing with the NFL. It's even more difficult with the Shield because NFL ended up being much bigger than even MLB. But there's certain brands like Napoleon Hill that exists in those sports that look as if they're bigger than the sports. I'll give you an example. I marketed and represented the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Most people think it's the NFL Hall of Fame. It's not. It's its own separate entity.
They do all of football.
Right. I could get deals done with the 270 Hall of Famers and the Pro Football Hall of Fame in a day sometimes compared to what it would take to get approval
from the NFL.
Same thing, I represented the Clemente family. The Clemente Awards, the number one humanitarian award of all sports. It's also one of the most popular awards given and brands within the context of Major League Baseball. And I could get a deal done because the Clemente family is not a Major League Baseball entity. It's its own separate entity that the MLB and Chevrolet give the award, but is not owned by MLB.
Yeah.
And so it's actually licensed the same way I licensed Napoleon Hill. So these lessons, it's really interesting how you start getting and thinking, well, shit, what if it takes me a year to get approval for Think and Grow Wealthy with Dave Meltzer and Ryan Pineda? That license isn't worth much.
Yeah.
But since it's a day turnaround, because I have experience with Clemente, Jackie Robinson, Pro Football Hall of Fame, you have so much more value because you can move so quickly with such a big brand.
Yeah. That makes sense. So you probably can't say, but like, how did it, I mean, you said you were looking for something. They also were looking for something. So you guys got matched together. Like, did you have to just pay this massive fee to do it?
Yeah. So
you had to pay royalties, all those things.
All those things. So it was divine. So the head of the Napoleon Hill Institute, I do these VIP dinners two or three times a week where I bring, it's my old school model, bring in celebrities like you to a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then we invite all these high net wealth people that want to meet you.
Yeah.
And then we speak at these dinners.
Yeah.
This woman came up to me and said, I was told by God to give you this pen.
Mm.
And I said, really? She said, I used to run Bob Proctor, who's a mentor of mine, his organization, Proctor Gallagher Training, and now I run the Napoleon Hill Institute, and God told me to give you Bob Proctor's pen. When he died, he gave me this pen, but I think it's for you.
Mm.
And I'm like, wow, like that's my mentor. Like,
yeah.
I started to tear up, and so I said, tell me more about Napoleon Hill. I don't really know what's going on. I said, years and years ago, I licensed Napoleon Hill Legacy movie. So I was a producer, and I owned part of that license to do a movie called The Napoleon Hill Legacy. Yeah. And we got all these, Bob Proctor was in the movie with me, but we all owned a part of it. So I had some familiarity of licensing Napoleon Hill in the past for this movie. So that's when it came to me, this divine inspiration. Hey, I'm looking for the license to a big community. Do you think you guys would be open to it? Oh my God, we're looking for someone to take over the corporate side. We don't do anything corporate. What do you have in mind? I said, well, you know, I have Dave Meltzer TV. Could you imagine I put all of my shows under Napoleon Hill TV?
Yeah.
And then go out to all the guys who I know that have these different shows and have a channel that's literally on, you know, Netflix or Vizio or wherever, Roku, and all the relationships I have. So it just started building, and then came the structure of it, which comes from my business is sports marketing.
Yep.
It's no difference, name, image, and likeness in audience.
Yeah.
So I formulated a deal just like I did in sports with both an upfront fee.
Yep.
As well as the Institute has 25%, I have 75%.
Okay.
So knowing to protect myself, it was an entity in which we both could share the rights and then the donation to the foundation as well. So having, it wasn't that I was greedy that I wanted 100%. I actually think there's more security and greater value in having them partner with me in the license than take a whole 100% part of the license. And it's an evergreen license, so my kids can take it over. They don't need Dave Meltzer to be there anymore because Napoleon Hill is already tested and trusted in time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so you guys would split after like net profit and everything else because you guys have the entity together.
Correct. So if we did, and they're motivated then to do things that are going to make money, not only just for the foundation, but they're motivated as well, Napoleon Hill Institute, because if we come to them and say, hey, let's do Think and Grow Wealthy.
Yep.
And they're going to say, well, what are the numbers? And say, look, Ryan packs a house at 4,000 people. I've been able to do this on the workshop and the dinner, et cetera. Could you see any reason you won't want to do this? And they get 25% of it.
They're like, whatever.
Exactly.
As long as it makes
money.
As long
as it's aligned as we are in the philosophies of Napoleon Hill, which you are and so am I.
Got it. And then I guess, what does this mean for you and your own personal brand?
So it allows me, and this is interesting because a lot of people are like, aren't you going to diminish your own brand? I don't think so. I think all tides rise together. And so it's the same way as if you're playing for the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
Does that hurt Ryan Pineda when he plays for the Oakland A's compared to if he was playing in the Independent League and he was the MVP of the Independent League or a starter for the Oakland A's?
Right.
Starter for the Oakland A's is greater by far. And so being able, for example, Napoleon Hill Awards, could you imagine with Napoleon Hill's brand and the credibility that it has, I'm now able to do Napoleon Hill top 10 lists, Napoleon Hill top 10 podcasts, Napoleon Hill top 10 speakers, Napoleon top 10 books. Well, that credibility, what does it do to the Dave Meltzer brand? Well, if I'm part of the decision-making process, and I'm very honest and truthful and illuminate the BS that exists in brand building, but you betcha that I'm going to be in the top 10 book list, speaker list, and podcast list, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of benefits for the Dave Meltzer brand for playing for the MLB instead of playing in the independent league.
Got it. That makes sense. So what do you think about, the way I think about it now that I'm just processing it all is it seems no different than if I was like one of the people at Barstool Sports and or any media company, whether it's Barstool or I get famous on ESPN or I get famous on I don't even know what these other networks, whatever. But you're going under their umbrella where they already got viewership and all this stuff.
Right. They have a community.
Yeah.
And this is a community that's over 100 years old that is completely aligned with my mindset, heartset, and handset. I was born and raised on Think and Grow Rich. What I built in my own brand is based off of what principles. You believe you can achieve.
Yeah.
The basis of Think and Grow Rich. And then there's a lot of the other curriculum and content. A lot of people don't know. One of my favorite books in the world, and if you haven't read it, is Outwitting the Devil.
Yeah.
And it's an absolutely beyond ahead of its time book that was written in 1938. He was scared to publish it because it talked about the devil and understanding what that meant to education, religion, and all these things that he thought he'd be ostracized or condemned for back in 1938. He dies in 1970. They released the book, and it's not till 2011 when the Napoleon Hill Foundation and Sharon Lecter actually published the book, Outwitting the Devil, which immediately becomes a worldwide best-selling book and nationally renowned and known.
Got it. So with the books and everything else, the only thing I see is like the difference, I guess, between if I was to go put my podcast underneath some big network, I don't know, Barstool or something else, they already have viewership. They can push people to mine. I know we're saying Napoleon Hill has a community, but there's like no regular viewers or communities, is there?
So there's a following from everyone that's bought the book, which is half a billion people have bought that book.
Saying like there's no, I don't want to say they're not active, but like,
right?
Is there a podcast? Is there like shows? There's nothing, not right? Yet.
Well, that's what's such a benefit for me.
So you have to build a lot of it. You have to build all of it.
White label it is my plan. So to take what already exists and then power it by Napoleon Hill and give it its community and give it. So take, for example, I'm talking to.
So take your current Sirius shows XM, and rebrand them.
Or just create a Napoleon Hill channel on Sirius XM and then gather shows that are aligned with a representative of that. I don't have to create the shows myself.
Yeah, you're creating the network.
Right. So if I go to Sirius, for example, and I say, okay, I want a Sirius channel, which I'm in discussions for because that's how big Napoleon Hill is.
Yeah.
Much more credible than David Meltzer channel.
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, it's bigger than Mad Dog Sports. It's now Napoleon Hill is like Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, okay, we're going to create a channel which creates, why do they want it? Because the guys who buy sponsorships love Napoleon Hill. So then what do? I come to Ryan and I say, hey, let's put Wealthy Way on
the Napoleon Hill channel
on Sirius XM.
Got it.
And I go to Bill Yu and Mylett and Gordon and all the guys that I know and say, look, your brand is so aligned with Napoleon Hill. You're not on Sirius XM. Come on to channel 209 and join me. And now we can sell sponsorship to the channel and you derive revenue and exposure to all of this community that's going to want to listen to when they see it on their car.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, there's a Napoleon Hill channel.
Yeah.
Oh, Dave Meltzer's featured on there. Ryan Pineda's featured on there. Tom Bilyeu's featured on there.
Yeah.
I'm not creating any different shows than I am. I'm just featuring me and my friends.
Yeah. You're just creating a network. Because that was my point, right?
Because like, I got like, the expensive part. I got the community, right? So people will buy sponsorships. People will pay and want to be part of whatever platform I'm on because we already have.
Do you get the database?
Yeah.
How big is the database?
SEO, millions. It's big. Well, the database includes whatever data they receive from anyone that's participated in the content.
Yeah, anyone that's ever opted into anything.
For the books, that have purchased books, you know, in whatever, they've been capturing that data for over a decade. Think about how many Think and Grow Riches are sold at Barnes & Nobles.
I actually just had a friend, and I'm not going to say who it is because I don't know if it's public yet. I don't know if he's supposed to. I have no idea. So, but he, I think he just cut a deal with Rich Dad Poor Dad, and to the point that they don't do anything with real estate right now anymore. Right. Like they did so for decades.
Sharon Lecter cut a deal with Kiyosaki as well years ago and did that book with Rich Dad Poor Dad as well.
Got it.
So he does that. That was one of the brands that I was looking at. Have you read that book, by the way?
Which one?
Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yeah. I read a long
Love
time
that,
ago.
Right?
Ugh. Yeah. Though I don't really believe a lot of the things it says anymore. I think the overall principles are good, but
the systematic way to do it. What I like in that book that still holds true is his definition of wealthy and
what was his definition? I don't even remember.
When your assets are drive more income than your expenses.
Got it. Okay.
Very simple.
That is simple.
I think that's wealthy though.
Yeah. And I think I don't know if he talked about this in the book, but I just remember real estate investors really loving the part about, hey, rental properties are the way to get assets that right. give you cash flow. And it's like, I've been hammering this home for a while now that like, no, that doesn't work anymore. Like for people who have been doing that for 30 years, cool. You guys are set. But for everyone starting today, lots of people listening to this podcast, younger people, 20s, 30s, even 40s. And it's like, dude, if you don't own like this portfolio yet and you're trying to build a rental portfolio today, that ain't going to happen for decades.
Yeah. And I think unless you're a syndicator and you're good at raising money.
Yeah.
Because he talks a little bit about that, but I agree with you 100%. Where it's interesting is there's a localization of STRs where I think individual investors have an opportunity where you can, around colleges and different lower cost areas in the country, where you have high ability to rent rooms in the STR side, like
short-term rental side. Yeah.
Yeah, on the short-term rental side. So if you have a really big football team in Tuscaloosa, Mississippi,
yeah,
and they'll rent out your 6-bedroom home for $5,000.
Yeah, I think there's arbitrages with whether it's like you're talking about college rentals, Airbnb, a lot of people are now doing assisted living.
Yeah.
Like you're basically taking a house Rehabs. And turning it into a business
right.
in general.
But the
right?
old traditional multi-unit.
Of just be a landlord, normal yeah. tenant.
But young kids, yeah. don't you think this is good? I want to know your advice because my kids are 25, 23, and 20. And I still think this is good advice. I think a single young person should buy a multi-unit up to 4 units and live in one and rent out the others as their very first real estate investment. I think it's a good place to start, and I think you can make money that way.
I think it's a great place. I think it just depends on your area. Because, like, for example, people ask me that about Vegas. Like, Ryan, where are some good fourplexes in Vegas? I'm like, ain't anywhere you want to live.
Right.
That's just the truth. But there are, like, other areas where there's, like, nice fourplex areas.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't in Vegas.
No, but Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, yeah.
So I think
Nebraska.
It depends where you want to live. But also, too, kind of like my point with the rental thing is that, like, for example, I got an Airbnb back in 2017 before it was popular.
Yeah.
And, dude, I was killing it. Now, that same city, it does not work because I bought these properties in Big Bear, California for $200,000. My mortgage was like $1,400. They're renting for $4,000 a month. So it was a cash cow.
Yeah.
I've sold a bunch of them. But today, if I was to try that same exact strategy today, this is the difference. That same house is now $450,000, $500,000. The rents is still pretty similar.
Yeah.
$5,000 a month, $4,000 a month. And it's like, all right, well, now my mortgage is like $3,000 to $4,000. I got clean. Like, I'm not even going to cash flow, number one. And then number two, the regulations have gotten so much worse. So in that city in particular, you are only allowed to own one, period. So you can't even build a scalable short-term business if you wanted.
Right.
So kind of my point with this is, even as people try to finagle the rental system to create co-living, you know, rent by the room.
Yeah.
It's like inevitably more and more restrictions keep coming and keep coming.
Even with ADUs, right?
Yeah, I mean, ADUs. Yeah.
Newsom just expanded how many ADUs you can have on a property, but it's still, they make it so cumbersome and regulated
yeah.
that they don't tell you that up front. The math seems easy until you get into the regulation permitting
yeah.
and the amount of time that you have to hold the property in order to facilitate having an ADU.
Yeah.
It's very conflictual.
Cost of labor and material and everything's going up.
It's a different world. So where do you think, not to take over your interview, I'm curious, where do you think a young investor in real estate should start?
So I'm glad you asked. You're like segueing into my whole new spiel about everything. So basically what I was saying about rich dad, poor dad was the concept of cash flow is correct. It's just the mechanism is not correct
today.
Anymore.
Right.
In my opinion, if you want to get into real estate, the best way to cash flow is to build an automated wholesale business. Because if I look at my career the last 10 years, I have made great cash flow, not for my rentals, from building an automated house flipping and wholesaling business. Now, the thing is, house flipping keeps getting more expensive, more risky. You got to wait. You got to raise more capital. You know, house flipping, I love it. I'll never stop flipping houses, but I do way less house flipping today than I used to. I used to have 50 to 70 flips at once,
right,
ongoing. Today, I have like 7. Mm-hmm. But I'm still doing the same amount of deals. So now we're just virtually wholesaling. And for those who don't know, I mean, wholesaling, you don't have to buy the house, so you don't need to get money. You don't have to fix it up, so you have no risk on those fronts. And you just sell the contract, so you get paid quicker. So everything about it's like, on a surface level, a better model. Less risk, more scale, you know, quicker payouts.
Yeah.
Everything's better. So the question then becomes, all right, well then, if it's better, then, you know, how do I build that business? And it's like, well, all you got to get is leads, get good at sales, and that's basically it. Because you're either selling the seller to sell you the home or you're selling a buyer to buy the home. And we can automate leads today. Sales is actually much easier today than ever because there's different exit strategies. And then finding buyers is easier than ever with technology. I mean, we know all the buyers now.
Right.
That used to not be the case 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But now, like, you could pull every buyer right here in Las Vegas who's bought a house cash right now. It takes 1 second.
Right.
And you could text blast them all right now. The deal. Now you have all the buyers. It's crazy. And so I look at that and I'm like, well, dude, if I was somebody trying to make 10 grand a month, 20 grand a month, even more, all I got to do is get one deal each month. And yeah, you know, it's not like, I don't want to say it's not going to be passive early on, but even buying a rental is not passive. You got to find the deal, fix it up,
manage, get financing.
Find a tenant. So take that out of nothing's passive in that way, but I would rather build something that can generate me way more money than $200 a month or even $1,000 a month, because it's the same amount of effort in my opinion, but the upside is huge.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've done a lot and still do, where on the commercial side I found a huge opportunity with the baby boomers is that people own businesses and they're in love with their business and they don't realize that the entity holds the ownership of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And they also don't know that when they've held a business for 20 or 30 years, that the lines of credit that are available under the entity, unsecured, by the way, allow you to purchase businesses with real estate underneath it.
Yeah.
And utilizing the timing of the closing in the correct manner where you can buy the business and take ownership of the property at a different time.
Yeah.
That you can own the business, pull the money out of the business from an unsecured line of credit.
Yeah.
And you're basically not only buying the business with its own line, but you're building and buying really valuable real estate, because the baby boomer has 30 years poured into the business and he's more concerned about the purchase price of the business than he is the real estate.
Yeah.
And so if you package in the real estate to the business,
yeah,
you're actually getting a better deal. And you have inherent financing, unsecured financing, that you can do a variety of different things. Now, a little bit more sophisticated. It's not for new buyers.
Yeah.
But we've been doing really well with some of the middle-aged mutant turtles like myself.
Just buying their businesses.
Buying businesses. And then you can sell off the business and own the real estate.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes you sell off the business and rent back the real estate to the guy that ran the business, and you're inheriting in cash flow again. So really cool. Anyway, let's go back.
Yeah.
I'll let you take over your own interview.
No, I mean, it's great. I mean, look, there's lots of ways to make money. It's just, what path do you want to choose? And I can tell you, like, even in that business example, I mean, on paper, an amazing, amazing opportunity. But there is risk buying the business. There's risk running it. There's overhead. There's employees. There's the building. Like, there's maintenance. There's lots of things with running a business. We're
employees
in a business
and
right
overhead.
That's yeah, lots, lots of risk, right? And as the guy who's taught people to flip houses for all these years, I've lost millions flipping houses because I've seen the other side when things go south. And, you know, I just look at, like, wholesaling. And that's why I'm calling, like, the model Cashflow 2.0, because it's like, this is...
You should license Rich Dad Poor Dad and do the book.
They should, and then exactly. we'll create the Cashflow 2.0 method.
Maybe I'll just put that under Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah, we don't need him. Yeah, we'll just do it right here.
That's bigger.
Yeah, so, but I think about it, and I'm like, okay, if I was looking for cash flow today, what would be the factors I look for in cash flow? And it really came down to the three things, right? It came down to, okay, I would want cash flow that was scalable, that had upside. Because in a lot of things, right, if you go buy a laundromat, it's not scalable. Like, it is what it is.
Right.
If you want another one, you got to go find another laundromat. You got to build, you know, take on that overhead, buy the business, do those things. So I want scalable cash. I want something that's as low risk as possible.
Right.
Okay. And then I want something that has quick time to income. Like, how quickly can I make the money? And so I look at wholesale. I'm like, all right, well, scalability-wise, I'm not confined to a building. I'm not confined to a market. We literally do this all across the country. So it's scalable to as far as I want to scale it. Risk-wise, I have no risk. Like, most salespeople are commission only. My risk at that point is just simply marketing. How much do I want to spend on leads?
Right. It's a vending machine then.
Yeah, it's like, if that's my only expense, marketing... Okay, I got other businesses. That ain't the only expense.
Right.
And then three is, how quickly can I get my money back? And it's like, wholesaling's quicker than any form of real estate in getting your money back. So I'm like, I've tried every business model under the sun. You know, I've tried other industries, other ways of doing real
flipping
estate.
Flipping couches.
Like, dude, and it's funny because, like, now I've circled back to my origins. After trying lots of things, realizing that, oh, this thing's actually a lot better.
You know, it's so funny because I started my career in technology, and looking at the size, scope, and scale of my business, I've never made more money than I make right now with less people. And it was because I hired two consultants that changed the face of my business, because I started looking at capability instead of job, careers, industries, and analysis of the future. So for me, I took and said, okay, here's my timing and risk tolerance. Take my business today of what I do. And I hired two consultants. One's an AI consultant, and the other was an outsourcing consultant, a virtual assistant, you could call it, but outsourcing talent.
Okay.
And so I said, analyze my business and tell me not what people, I want to keep people, but I want to know what capabilities that I am paying for today, skills, knowledge, not desire, but skills and knowledge. And what can I use AI for to take away what people are doing that AI can do? And two, how can I pay other people that I don't have to have an emotional connection to, that somebody else has to hire, fire? They just have to deliver, and my cost is set.
Yeah.
And so the best thing I did in my business that created this great wealth in income is I had these two consultants, and I still have them, by the way.
Yeah.
And they took us from, you know, I probably have 1/10 the full-time employees. I have more people that are hired and more technology that utilize what we do. But I went down to 30 people, and I probably have 300 people that are outsourced that are working for me that I don't know, don't have any emotional connection to.
Like 300 actual people? Are you like comparing it to like saying they're AI?
No. So not counting AI, but like 300 people that literally
like VAs.
VAs or part-time, you know, funnel this or editing this, or, you know, there's a variety of different things that they're doing that are all outsourced. They don't fall under me. They're just a monthly expense, and it's set. And I can get rid of it at any time. So if the market changes, I'm not in that situation.
What's your overhead with the 300 people?
So put $16 million to carry those people.
across all your businesses.
All the businesses. So, yeah, we're a little for those over, who don't know, little like, what over are, a million a month.
Yeah, for those who don't know, like, what are your businesses?
Yeah, so content is the center point of my business. So we have a media company. So I executive produce TV shows, movies. So I license, for example, First and 10, which is an old HBO 8-season. O.J. Simpson was in it. We license that entity, and we're going to launch that on Netflix. So I have all this media side of stuff, which is production. I have, you know, several TV shows, GoFundMe, 2-Minute Drill, Office Hours. The Playbook actually is as well. So a lot of those people are in media production.
Got it.
And they're all outsourced.
What percentage of the 300 would you say?
80%. About 240 people.
So we're talking video guys, editors, production people,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, distribution, P&A, even the sponsorship side of stuff is all outsourced sales, PR.
Got it.
All of that. And then the coaching side of what I do is the other side of the business. So believe it or not, outsourcing all of the PR and marketing, understanding how to use all that media in order to create a top of the line funnel. So books, coaching, all of the content side of, you know, the other 60 people.
Yeah.
And then I have 30 people running all of that.
Got it.
And so there's 10 what I call horsemen that are run by four people. So it's basically four people with seven people below, but the 10 people do a lot. And then you have like your normal development people like Nick, who you met.
Yeah.
So Nick's one of the 10.
So you have basically media and consulting. Those are the cores.
Yeah.
Got it.
Content, media, and consulting.
Right. Okay. And then, so you've outsourced majority of your people now. So they're not full-time payroll staff guys that are, you know, high paying people.
Right. And I do have the investment side, but that's all me and my wife. So when we're looking at, you know, the properties, the management of my assets. So I do venture,
yeah,
but that's all me personally.
Right.
So I don't have any employees. It's all partnered, outsourced from angel to mezz. You know, we do a lot, and I combine that with consulting. So, and speaking, by the way, so there's ways of investing in a company and not being a broker dealer, but bringing more investment into the company by investing in a company,
yeah,
and then being hired by the company when you succeed in getting the capital into a company. So I've done deals where I've raised $50 million, not as a broker dealer, but I've invested money. Because I invested money, I've made introductions to other venture people who are like, shit, Dave Meltzer's in this deal. I went in, I'm an advisor for the company. So I have all these streams of income. Then they hire me after they're funded as a consultant, a speaker, a coach, all of these different areas that just feed all the different streams of income.
Got it. What do you think makes you the most?
Venture.
Venture.
Yeah, the venture. So the coaching, you know, like I do most of my coaching for free. I do free Friday trainings. I have a group of like 3,000 people that pay me hardly anything for once a week.
Yeah.
Then I have 100 one-on-one clients, which look, I have a huge wait list. So I'll be transparent. I charge $1,500 for 100 people to one-on-one coach them, but they have to adhere to my format. Then the consulting business.
It's $1,500 a month?
For two 20-minute phone calls and being on call.
But they pay $1,500 a month.
A month, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
So that's 100. I probably have 200 and some people on a wait list, but most of them won't come out because I only work month to month and guarantee profitability beyond the subjective value of being a coach.
Yeah.
So I keep it low enough where I know I'm a profit center.
How much time do you spend on one-on-one calls? That's going to be a lot.
So twice a month for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's max, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just did one in between the two interviews today.
Got it.
So if you break it down with 100 people, it's 50 calls every 2 weeks, 25 a week. So it's about four calls. I do it 7 days a week. It's usually four calls a day for 20 minutes max.
Got it. So it's
so I do
call it an hour and a half a day.
Yeah, but I usually do 6:30, 6:50, and 7:10 a.m. And then one floater like I did today at 1 o'clock.
How many hours a month is that? I'm not like, the math come out to?
The thing is, when you're good at it and you're on call, very rarely do you do the full 20 minutes. The first time, the first calls are about 30. After that, you know, my calls today have averaged about 8 minutes. And then I use Plaid. You know what Plaid is?
No.
You gotta get it. So Plaid's on the back of your phone. It integrates with your phone calls. It's AI, so it captures your phone call, and then it can generate not just transcribing, but a summary of a call with the people who are talking.
Got it.
And then that is put into a file, sent out. And so it's very, this is one of the AI things that the AI consultant got me.
Got it.
Because I used to have an employee that would have to take the transcription and then edit it into notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then have the, all yeah, of we, that's gone.
Yeah, Javi, my COO, has that.
Yeah, it's killer.
Yeah, he always, I don't even know what he does, but he'll send the notes out. I'm like, oh, that was cool.
Plaud is killer.
Yeah, he has that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and now we got a necklace that we could wear while we're doing this, and it would.
Well, I don't take notes, so I don't need it.
Yeah,
it's for everyone else.
Yeah,
I've never been a note taker. Are you a note taker?
No, but now I can.
I won't read them, but right. Other people
no, I
can.
Send them. I send them.
Yeah, that's funny. So you spend. I just want to do them. I mean, 100 times 40 minutes. I mean, that's.
No, each day it's about an hour, so it's 7 hours a week.
Yeah. So it's about 30 hours a month. Got
yeah,
it.
30 hours a month, but it's 150 grand a month.
No, I know.
And
I was just trying to do the math. Like,
yeah.
It seems like a lot.
But it's also really rewarding.
I guess it's hard for me to fathom thinking about 100 different people's unique situations and remembering that. Because I have 8 one-on-ones.
That's where the notes come in.
Yeah, you wouldn't need notes at 100, but I have 8, and I am like, you know, I know what's going on, and there, and I can remember what we talked about last month and all that. We do an hour a month. That's it.
Yeah.
But
the one I want to institute that you do that's the best is I want to play golf with people for money and coach them when I play golf.
Dude, I just took.
When I get older, I'm doing that.
I just took a group of 5 people to Bandon Dunes.
I saw. That's so awesome.
It was fun, dude.
Yeah.
They loved it.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Once my son goes to college, I think I'm going to get into more of those type of situations.
The retreats.
Yeah.
Nice. Hey, by the way, anyone who wants to come with us to Cancun, December 5th to the 9th, we only have like 3 seats left, or rooms left, I should say, wealthyretreat.com. You guys can get that. But, so back to just like the brand thing. I think the brand thing's so interesting because somebody watching this right now is, I mean, they're listening to all these different ideas and stuff like that. And I want to like give them some applicable things they could do. So building your own brand is obviously super hard.
Yes.
And we both agree it's worth doing. It's smart, but are there other opportunities to piggyback off someone else's brand at maybe a cheaper, like, I know none of these guys are going to go walk up to Napoleon Hill and go do that.
But you know what's the greatest hack? And people don't realize, I talked earlier about being one of the best content capturers in the world. I'm not a content creator. I pay people to create my content.
Yeah.
But I'm very cognizant about how I'm capturing what I'm doing. And I don't do it anymore. I did 100 vlogs under the guidance of Gary Vee years ago and spent a fortune with a whole... You remember my posse that you used to see me with all the time? That's no more.
You're like, it ain't worth it.
It's, yeah, it's just capturing and understanding, you know, when I have an idea, I might grab my phone, I might text someone, text myself. Capturing is important. But where the hack comes in, if you want to build a community, then go on it. There's so many podcasts, so many people interviewing people. And I probably do more interviews than anyone. And I still do really small shows. Not this one, obviously. This is a great show. But I get a lot out of it because there's some doctor in Beverly Hills, for example. You and I have never heard of him before. But his audience is rich.
Yeah.
And he has 150 people listening to his podcast because they're like friends.
They're all qualified.
Or they're also doctors and they admire this guy's practice. And so then he brings me on and they've never heard anyone like me or you.
Yeah.
And they're interested in real estate or they're interested in media or content and this. And then I'm talking on there to 150 people, not the Bilyeus and the Pinedas and the Milets and all the big shows I've been on. But out of the 150 people, I'll say, hey, I'm more than happy to provide your entire community my book. In fact, your whole community. I will send my book, sign it, pay for shipping in the book, email me, david@dmeltzer.com. And I'll say that on this tiny show, david@dmeltzer.com. And of 150 people, 25 of them, rich doctors, will email me and say, hey, can you coach me? Can you help me? Hey, can I hire you to speak? You're amazing. And meanwhile, all these idiots are spending all their time, like you said, trying to get on Gary Vee's show.
Yeah.
With a bunch of 19-year-old life coaches. you know, that are never going to email because they don't read. You hide your money in the books because they're never going to open the book, and your money's more safe in the books than it is in your safe. And literally, I am the master hacker. That's why I keep all my interviews to 20 minutes or less for the small shows, because I want to do five of those if I can in a week. And now I'm getting 125 legitimate people for the least amount of time and money in direct marketing.
That makes sense.
Because I resonate with those people.
Yeah, maybe I need to do more.
You should.
I don't even know how I've done what I've done, because I do it so different than everyone.
That's why.
Yeah. Like I don't like speaking on other people's stages. I don't like going on shows. I'm just like, bro, I got my own stuff. Like, come through.
And I'm both. Yeah. Like I like to do my own shit. Yeah. That's why I go live every day. Like I'm blessed, because you know this from what you love to do, and you're one of the things I love about you is you know what you like and what you don't like, and you're very clear about it.
Yeah.
I love going live, and people like,
that ain't me.
Dude, exactly. But I'm like one of the few people on earth that have this freakish obsession about, I just enjoy talking to the stupid phone and answering people's questions.
Yeah.
But it's built my brand. Yeah. Nobody else goes live every day.
Yeah. And you don't care how many people are on.
No,
you're still going to do it.
I don't care. Even when I started speaking, my wife made fun of me because, you know, my speaking career has really taken off. And I can't even believe like what I get to do and how much I get paid for as little as I have to do sometimes. But my wife, we went to dinner last night. She's like, these people were super impressed. We get to go to Dubai again and make six figures for speaking. And my wife gets to come and we're vacationing. And she's like, yeah, but you weren't there in Seattle, you know, when Dave flew up there and there was two people.
And he did it.
And I did it.
Yep.
They were so embarrassed, they almost said, you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And it was free, obviously, right? Yeah, I wasn't paid to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was beautiful. But I feel the same way when I started lives. There was no one there, but I was just like, hey, can you ask a question? I had my own team come on.
Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a wine aficionado, Justin has a wine for every celebration and occasion. Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on California's Central Coast. The Justin team believes that the wine should be exceptional from every angle, which is why their team uses boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin produces exceptional wines and is proud to be America's number one luxury Cabernet. Enjoy exceptional wines all season long with Justin. Whether it's for seasonal celebrations, festive dinner parties, or gift exchanges, Justin Wine is sure to make your holidays memorable. Pick up Justin Wine today at a store near you. Visit justinwine.com and enter Playbook 20 for 20% off your order. Justin offers the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Be sure to check them out at justinwine.com to receive 20% off your order for a limited time. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, everyone. I want to take a moment to talk about gratitude. In our fast-paced lives, we often forget to appreciate the people around us. And sometimes we even forget to appreciate ourselves. So today, let's pause and give thanks not only to others, but also to ourselves for the hard work we put in every day. It's so important to recognize that doing our best, especially in challenging times, is an accomplishment. Now, have you ever thought about starting therapy, or if you're looking for a new perspective, consider giving BetterHelp a try. Therapy offers tools to build resilience, set boundaries, and grow into the best version of yourself. And with BetterHelp, everything is designed to be convenient and flexible, fully online to fit right into your schedule. Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/playbook today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, help.com/playbook.
You know, it's funny. I got a memory in my iPhone the other day, and it was from 2018. And I had a brokerage at the time, real estate brokerage, and we had 10 agents. Eventually, I grew that brokerage to 200 agents before getting rid of it. But at the time, I was training our 10 agents that we had on social media. And it's funny because in 2018, I wasn't like a big social media guy. I just had like started Instagram. I had like a few thousand followers, a few thousand on Facebook. And that was all I had. you know, people in Vegas knew of me, but that was it. No, nowhere else, right? But I was already sharing with them social media things that I knew to be true. I was like, guys, you got to tell your story. And it didn't, like, I didn't really learn this from anyone. I just had figured it out. I'm like, your story matters. Like, just be authentic. Like, just tell people what you do. And I was like, share your wins. Because if you don't tell people what you're doing, they don't know. Nobody knows how many deals you closed until you tell them. Nobody knows about your flip until you tell them. Nobody knows about the house you sold until you tell them. So I was just like sharing these principles, and it was just funny looking back. I was like, man, in the way I tell the story of how I got on YouTube and TikTok and stuff, you know, it happened during COVID, because that's when I actually took it seriously.
Yeah.
But clearly for years, like, it was already brewing within me that, hey, social media actually can make you money. But I wasn't looking at it from the point of being like a guru. It was just like, yeah, I think if you make content, you're going to get deals. You're going to get investors. And that's what I was looking for at that time in my business.
You know where I found it interesting was the bankruptcy, because it was my greatest fear, it was my identification. And when I first started, I was blessed because I was consulting for Vayner, AJ, about the sports agency. So they wanted me to help build the sports agency, and I had no idea who Gary Vee was. In fact, my favorite story is AJ invited me, I was at the Super Bowl, to the Nike suite to meet his brother. Well, Gary Vee walks into the Nike suite, and everyone goes crazy, like, holy shit, Gary Vee's here, and all these people. And I look to AJ Vaynerchuk, true story, I'm like, who does he play for?
he plays for YouTube.
Exactly. He's like, you gotta be kidding, I didn't know who he was. And but to that respect, I told Gary, he told me, you got to do this content.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, like, what am I going to say? He's like, well, tell them about your challenge. Tell them what. I'm like, dude, I lost everything. I'm not going to tell anybody that I lost over $100 million, went bankrupt. He goes, you'll be surprised what you tell people. And later on, like, more people hire me for financial advice because I lost over 100 than when I made it.
Let's talk about failure, because a lot of people are afraid to share it. And I mean, I've shared my failures, but, you know, for me, I'm like an optimistic guy. I'm like never trying to dwell on the past. I'm like, yo, it's about to be, it's all good. I might have struck out the last year, but guess what? My next one, I'm about to crank it.
Right.
That's just my mindset, right? So, but a lot of people, they struggle with failure. And I mean, you lost $100 million. Yeah. So, you know, when I think about my failures, I just think of David Meltzer, and I feel better about myself.
Feel
better,
good, thank you.
So,
I love that. You're not the first person that tells me that. I love that.
I'm like, oh, it was only, you know, 10. That's not bad. So tell me about, and I'll share for mine for the audience too, but just tell me about psychologically dealing with that, the stress. I'm sure you weren't sleeping. Yeah. Sure, your health was bad. Like, it just affects everything. Like, what was that experience like?
It was awful because my identity was tied to how much money I had. And but for my faith and the people that I hated the most, would I have ever survived? Meaning that I hated my mom, I hated my dad, I hated my best friend, and I hated my wife because they were telling me the truth. And everybody else, when you have a lot of money,
What were they telling you the truth about?
I'm lost. You're going to lose everything. You're an idiot. You got to stop using drugs and drinking. You're not paying attention. You know, all and I was there going, I'm worth over $100 million. You made $17,000 a year. Who do you think you're talking to? Like, this was, you know, rhetoric. And so for me, it was those people that I sat when I lost everything thinking, I hate all these people. They screwed me over. They didn't believe in me. You know, they didn't love me. But the people who were telling me the truth, when the opposite was true, it was the other people that were smoking, you know, up my butt, yeah, all kinds of BS of how great I was until the money was gone. And then that led me to understand that I hated myself.
Got it.
And so when I realized there's something wrong here, these are the four people that love me the most and I hate them.
Yeah.
And I realized that I hated myself, and then I realized, and one of the crucial moments was when I went to have to go tell my mom, the only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy my mom a house. I had to go tell my mom I lost everything, including her home, because I had my name on her title.
Right.
And my mom, I remember telling her that I'm punished. I don't know why. I remember boasting. I've done everything that I could, you know, denying the blame, shame, and justification of the shit that I was doing.
Yeah.
And then I said to her, and this was the faithful moment, I said to her, Mom, I don't believe in God. And my mom said in a calm face and looked me in my mom's very religious. She said, son, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God.
Mm.
Why don't you go take stock in who you were and what you want to become and tell me you don't believe in God. And so this whole transformation took some time, but I will tell you the wisdom that I received from my mom, my dad, my wife, and my best friend, and the faith was what got me through changing the meaning of my past from punishment to protection and promotion and love, and allowed me to shorten that distance of shame, blame, and justification that occurs when you lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there was many days that all I said is, I know that I'm on the divine direction. This is just simply a divine detour. I know God has my back now. All those other people that I relied on, they're not here, nor will they be there. I rely on God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I if you would have told me that I would, number one, tell people I was bankrupt, but two, tell people that God was the reason I made it all back and I'm who I am today, I would have told you, no way.
Yeah.
There's, I'm not that guy. But that's what I love about you is that I wear my faith and my wisdom on my shoulders. And people, I tell the truth. This is, I tell them all the time, this is what I'm afraid of. I tell them when I'm in an argument with my wife, I've been married 27 years. I tell them I was a shitty husband.
Yeah.
Right? I tell people, but I'm not anymore. I am a great dad. I am a great husband. I am a really good person who is trying my best, but yet I spend minutes and moments out of faith.
Yeah.
And I share those minutes and moments so that people, like, there's, you know how they elevate your brand? They're like, oh my gosh, you get angry?
Yeah. Right?
Like, they're surprised that you get worried.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shit, I get worried every day.
Yeah. I got $1 million a month in payroll. You don't think I'm worried?
Exactly. Over.
Yeah.
And that's outsourced.
Yeah, exactly.
At least I can cancel within 30 days.
Yeah. I had a podcast guest telling me about that. I was like, dude, so now that you don't have to worry about money anymore. I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't know any rich person that doesn't worry about money. Like, it does not matter. I'm like, do you think Elon Musk is worried about money right now? Absolutely, dude.
For sure.
Do you know how much?
Read his book.
Yeah. I'm like, bro, he bought Twitter way overpriced. He has all these companies burning so much cash.
He went
cash.
To the hospital because he worried so much.
Yeah.
Like, literally has ulcers.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, like the richest man in the world is more worried about money than probably you or I.
For sure.
So this money worry is never going away. So it just like, it cracked me up because I was like, I don't care if you make 50 grand a year or 500 million a year. They yeah. all are worried.
Yeah. It's just like relationships with your wife. Like for me, I adore my wife and I put her up on a pedestal because she deserves it. And I've heard a funny statement, you know, behind every great man is an amazing woman. I also add, also you have an amazed woman. Because she knows you so well that if you're successful, she's so amazed. Like, are you kidding me? And so, yeah. But people, I'll tell them, like, my wife gets mad at me when I say it. I'm like, look, I said that, I can't believe what I did, but I said this to my wife and she's super pissed at me right now. Because I said something stupid.
Yeah.
And people, I think, resonate with the fact they can trust you when you tell them that you're human. And that you're reacting to fear all the time, and that your relationships aren't perfect, your finances aren't perfect, your decision making in business isn't perfect. They're not perfect. We are perfectionists, but we are not perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. How many years did it take for you to finally get past the bankruptcy?
I'm still working on it. It took me at least 2 years where I could function.
So for 2 years, you were wandering just...
I was working really hard out of fear, and it was an omnipresent, awake, and sleeping problem.
Yeah.
About that worry, stress, anxiety, blame, shame, justification.
Because I think a lot of people are right now in that stage.
Yes.
I think the economy has been as bad as it's been since the recession.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are going through it. I myself have been going through it. especially in real estate. People have been going through it.
Insurance, real estate,
everything. All the,
so, yeah.
So I think there's a lot of people currently in that dark moment. So what do you do?
Yeah, I think you have to understand the two things that limit you. The first one's the most important. Ask yourself, what meaning am I giving my past? And make sure that the meaning of your past, the setbacks, failures, mistakes, defining moments, historical relevances are aligned with where you think you want to be.
Yeah.
And that's the optimist in you and me.
Yeah.
But also, the one thing I had to fight, and I still practice, that will limit you, the meaning you put on your past, but you will never overachieve your own self-image.
Mm.
And so what I want people to do when you're in these darker, more challenging times is take inventory every day of your self-image, which should include looking at what skills you have,
mm-hmm.
what knowledge you have of who and what, and your desire. Take inventory of those three things and then align it with what's doing well today, what's stable today, and what you think is doing well in the future. And you'll start realizing that you're being given opportunity that other people aren't aware of because they are living in a world of punishment where you're looking at what you do want, not what you don't want or what other people want for you or other people are telling you. And this key distinction of the two limitations, the limitation of the past is the meaning you give it, the limitation of your future is the self-image derived from your skills, knowledge, and desire, which you can easily align. This is why so many millionaires and probably even billionaires now are made in these times, because it's those people with a self-image and an inventory of their skills, knowledge, and desire that say, hold on a second, things suck right now, but this right here is doing well, this right here is stable, and this is what I think is going to do well. And you mentioned one of those areas in wholesaling.
Yeah.
Where everyone else in real estate has no clue other than there's no inventory, interest rates are high, and my real estate business sucks.
Yep.
You, on the other hand, have done exactly what I said. You changed the meaning of your past. You got hit pretty hard.
Yep.
But it's not limiting you in your future, and you have a self-image based off of your skills, knowledge, and desires, which since baseball has always led you to success. Mm-hmm. And so now you're aligning that with what's doing well today, what's stable today, and what you think is going to do well in the future. And you came up with this automated wholesaling idea from this exact way of thinking.
Yeah. Dude, I love that. By the way, anyone who wants to learn more about that, cashflow20.com. Number two, letter O. But yeah, actually, I want to expand on what you just said about, I don't know, you hit 3 points of like not like identifying with your past.
Yep.
Looking at like, hey, obviously this isn't working, but it's like showing some promise and this is where I believe things are going, right? So I'll just say, as somebody who went through the ringer the last 2 years, it's interesting because people will say, bro, like, look at all how much you've grown from the outside. And I'm like, bro, dude, if you had any idea how much drama I've had to deal with, you know, losing millions on flips that went south, shutting down businesses, lawsuits.
Hate.
just freaking everything, right? And it was really like this massive testing of my identity, right? Because, and I think this is a lot of people, so I'll just, you know, share it transparently. You start to hear what people say about you, and they're like, dude, you lost $100 million. Oh, you suck as a house flipper. Oh, you started a business and failed. Oh, you did this. And it's like, man, maybe they're right. Like, that's the next thing of like, these are the results of, you know, what's happening currently in my life, in my business, and whatever else. And sometimes you take of what's happening right now in the moment, and it negates everything that's happened to this point. And it's like, well, you know, you were like super legit for like the previous 8 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go through a 2-year stretch that's bad, and now you're coming out of it with an even, in my opinion, for me and anyways, like I feel like I have now something even better, you know, at least from a business standpoint, from a faith standpoint, from an identity standpoint. Like I feel like I went through the fire and I'm now infinitely stronger. Now, have I recouped everything that was mine? No.
Not yet.
Not yet. But I feel and I can see that, oh yeah, I don't want to say I'm glad. I wish I would have like did things differently.
Right.
Like, I wish I didn't have to go through it.
Yeah.
But here we are. It's happened. I can't dwell on it. And I just got to keep moving on.
But that's where faith comes in, because you don't have to be glad that it happened, but you have to believe it's divine in its detour. Meaning, I find the light, the love, and the lessons. I give the meaning to losing everything that it saved my life.
Mm. Because you were on a destructive path.
I would have died. I definitely would have been divorced. And then without my wife, I would have died. And so literally, it's the meaning of saying, okay, look, I don't want to do that again. I'm not happy it happened, but it did promote me. It did protect me. And it proves to me that God loves me, because it was just a matter of divine time to show me where I was literally moving towards. And that's not where I wanted to be or better, my potential. I was limiting my potential, and I was interfering with me and God.
Yeah. Well, and even speaking on that, I was interviewing David Green. So he recently was let go from the Bigger Pockets podcast, and that episode has done really well. And he shared everything that has gone wrong in his life the last 2 years. Like, dude, if you think that you had a tough 2 years, go listen to that podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, did I actually, somebody put in the comments, they're like, if you're ever feeling bad about yourself, just go think about David.
And both Davids, right? Both Davids. Exactly. If you think you're a loser, think of both Davids, the double D. That's what you need to be. That's good.
So, but it was so good. And I shared on that podcast, because he's a Christian. So we were just talking a lot about faith. And he was like, Ryan, and he's also a podcast host, so he does what you do too, where he starts interviewing
back.
And he was like, Ryan, what do you think? Like, do you think that God forced you to go through that? To obviously make you a hard today. And I go, honestly, I've had a new revelation of all of it, of how all this works. And it's this, like, I don't think God forced me to go through it. I think that I made bad decisions and I forced myself into my situation and I had to face my own consequences. But I think that, as Romans 8:28 says, that God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose, that everything is for my good. And so it's not that, hey, God makes me do bad things. Right. And then it's for my good. It's that I do bad things and I should face way worse consequences and penalties and everything for the bad, dumb decisions I make. But because I'm following his purpose, he chooses to still make that bad situation for my good. It's an after effect. It's not a, hey, I'm leading you into this. It's,
we're pushing you into it.
Right? You're an idiot. Like, I have to bail you out again, and I'm going to make this still work out for you, despite it really should not.
Which is why some people don't get to where they want to be or better, because these life lessons keep on coming until you learn them. So you led yourself into an opportunity to learn. Using God's grace, gratitude gives you the ability to find the light, the love, and the lessons in shitty things.
Yeah.
Also gives you forgiveness.
Yeah.
To forgive yourself.
Forgive myself.
Because you're on purpose with the belief in God.
Yeah.
And then to be accountable and say, what did I do to learn this?
Yeah.
And then you can be in spirit and inspired at a higher level, clearing more of the interference, the reaction to fear, the bad behavior that causes you to interfere with the truth, with your potential in God.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you look at other people in this framework of, you know, his basement had a basement, like David and I. Shit, you know, your basement had a basement. But you talked about other people's opinion.
Yeah.
And one of the key components of the faith and recovery that I went through in my faith was that I stopped relying on what other people think or trying to be something of what other people think.
Yeah.
I am an image, a co-creator,
yeah,
and I want to live up to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it hit me. One of the things that really sucked when I went BK, it's almost 18 years ago, right? It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so there's guys, we talk about the good 8 years, and you have these people around you that come to you and say, Ryan, I want to invest in that, man. You make so much money.
Yeah.
Let me be a part of it. Begging you.
Yep.
And so, like, I didn't need the money because I wasn't, you know, in a syndicated situation. I wasn't raising money, but I was like,
yeah, let's do
man, how much you got? 10 grand. Okay. So these were the guys that really hurt me the most because I had childhood friends that didn't have a lot of money.
Yep.
And I had childhood friends that also had a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they gave me 10 or 25 grand in a deal.
Yeah.
And then they lost it like I did.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them had multi-millions of dollars in a house, but they used me. When you talked about what people say, I heard, you know, oh, well, you know, this guy said that you're the reason he went bankrupt. He invested his money in your company.
Yeah.
And I knew that he invested 10 grand, no reason for his $5 million to go down.
Yeah.
But I was a great scapegoat. And in the Bible, think about how many people are utilized in this position in order to elevate their growth and their brand. That made me grow so much.
Yeah.
Because I didn't attack. I didn't even defend.
Yeah.
I just said, if that was the reason that they went BK because they invested in me, then I forgive myself.
Yeah.
I did my best. I literally tried, but I hope they learned as much as I have from it so that they can also recover themselves. But of course, those aren't the people that recovered. They're still
bitter.
They're broke.
Well, right? And it goes
and
back
then they're
to,
madder at me because I'm not.
Well, and it just is like, yeah, there's two levels of accountability. There's you as the guy who took their money, and then there's them like, dude, you made a choice to invest. You made a choice on other decisions in your life. Like, if, and you know, you hear about the person who invested their life savings in something or whatever else, and it's like, that was still you. You chose to do it. Like, I don't understand.
Right.
Yeah, you can get mad at that crypto dropped or that the business failed or that this, you know, investment didn't work out, but it's like, it's still you investing.
Of course, you got to know your timing and risk tolerance. I use this example.
And that's what I was saying too, also about like even my house flips. It's like, dude, I ended up having to eat millions of my own money and I paid back all my investors. And I didn't necessarily have to do that. Like, they knew what they were investing in. Like,
yeah,
it's a deal. Things go sideways and I still chose to do it. But it was only because I was in a position to be able to do it. If I wasn't, and it's like, if they're mad at me because the real estate market doubled interest rates and things went south, and like, you know, I'm sure many, many, many would have. And I've had it happen in other things that I've sold where that happened. And it's like, yeah, I feel terrible. Like, I wish it would have never happened. But at the end of the day, there's still two levels of accountability in every transaction.
Yeah. And that's so difficult. I think I teach people to know your timing and risk tolerance now. If I wish I would have known that before, meaning that, let's take a lottery ticket. There's a difference. When you know your timing and risk tolerance up front, you will be disappointed when you lose your money.
Yeah.
But you won't be resentful and guilty.
Mm.
And the reason is, if you know a lottery ticket's $2, you have a 1 in a billion chance to make a half a billion.
I'm not going to be mad that it didn't work out.
If you know it's a 1 in a billion chance, half a billion, and on Saturday at 8 o'clock, you're going to know whether you won or lost. When you lose the $2, it's okay to be disappointed. But it's aligned with the timing and risk tolerance.
Yeah.
So you're disappointed, but you're not resentful and guilty going,
the lottery's rigged.
Right. Exactly. Or that guy told me to buy the ticket. Right.
Yeah.
And why do they put it at the grocery stores? They're just contributing to the delinquency of gambling. You know,
yeah,
all these blame, shame, and justifiers. It's amazing. If you know your timing and risk tolerance up front and you're smart about what you invest with, aligned with that, you'll never be resentful or guilty. You could be disappointed,
yeah,
like you and I, but you won't be resentful and guilty. And that is a very healthy way to invest.
Yeah. How do you think you would deal with it today, now being known on social media, right? Because I feel like, you know, 18 years ago, you know,
nobody,
it's like,
knew, right?
Like, you lost it. And it's like, it's just kind of, I don't want to say swept under the rug because now you bring it up. But like, we're in an era now of social media where, you know, the most famous people are public. And so any failure is now public. And it's funny because I'm like watching it happen in real time. And it's all new because clearly business is just full of failure.
Yeah.
And so I watch people who have had great brands who like honestly haven't really failed much. And I watch a guy like Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
For example, like just getting more hate than ever. And I'm like, why are people so mad at Mr. Beast? Like, I don't get it. And they're like, well, then this guy, this thing. And
that's
then
the difference. So this is so interesting because no one's ever really talked about this. And I think it's really important. I lost all my money so long ago and nobody's out there
talking about it.
Yeah. No one's saying he's an asshole. He like very, very rarely, does someone say, oh, Dave Meltzer effed me over.
Yeah.
Because they're just not there. The difference is, if I go BK today, I'd be screwed.
Yeah.
Because everybody would be there going, dude, he's screwed.
Yeah.
That's what's happening to all of these people.
Yeah.
So as long as I live my life aligned with the values that I have and where I understand I am today, I will never have that happen to me because I have protected myself that I don't take investments. Like, I've learned my lessons, right?
So you don't take investments anymore?
Never. I only
You said people will still invest, though.
Because I'm in a deal, but I don't ask them to.
So, but they could still say, oh, well, freaking day, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but I will tell you, but
yeah,
like, my money's in there, and that's why, like, the big joke was, you know, one time a guy said, you know what it was?
What?
Arthur Blank invested $2 million into this deal. He's the owner of the Falcons.
Yeah.
So Blank said, Dave Meltzer put $100,000 in this deal. Literally, this is what he said. He goes, holy shit. If you get any money out of David Meltzer, I'm investing, right? But he's not going to be mad at me if he loses his money.
Well, billionaires get a different mindset towards investing.
But I'm not taking friends' money, right? So when I'm making introductions, it's mostly institutional, venture, angels, professional investors.
So you're just protecting yourself from scrutiny from, like, general public type people.
Yeah, it's somebody that would say, that's why I only work month to month with anyone, and I guarantee every month profitability, because there's no one out there, even with my programs, that could say, oh, Dave Meltzer charged me $97 for this and it didn't work. No, Dave Meltzer charged you $97 and it didn't work and he gave you back your $97 for any reason. You could say, I don't like his hair. And so, but I literally have built in these mechanisms, not because I'm afraid of haters out there. You know, once in a while, someone will say something like, you stole gratitude from Gary Vee or something stupid. I'll give him my cell phone number. Mm. And I'm like, obviously, you're angry. Let me help you with your anger.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you going out there. I can take it, but other people may not be able to take it. Let me heal what you're feeling. But it will limit. But I really appreciate people that are out there and have a failure and they have to deal with something I never did. I had to deal with my neighbors.
Yeah.
And my family, friends. And my family, that sucked.
Yeah, that was
rough. I couldn't imagine if I had on top of that, my neighbors, family, friends, and all my followers telling me the shit that my neighbors, family, friends and were telling me in person or behind my back.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, I bring that up because, I mean, I myself have had to deal with it with different business failures. And then, you know, like I said, I look at guys who have perfect brands like Mr. Beast, and then now he's doing a thing with Logan Paul. And they got Lunchly, which, by the way, is going to kill it.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh, man, that's a billion. That's another Billy. And but, you know, now there's, why is he teaming up with Logan Paul? Logan Paul did X, Y, Z. And it's like, Logan Paul's still moving along. He don't give a crap.
I invited Ja Rule to my dinner in New York. He's coming, right? And so someone's like, isn't Ja Rule friends with P. Diddy? I'm like, I don't know who he's friends with. Like, you don't want to come to dinner. I don't know. Ask him when you're at dinner. I don't know. Like,
yeah, what?
I didn't know P. Diddy. And if I did, I would have no problems because I go to bed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And from what I heard, P. Diddy did nothing bad before 9 o'clock. So I'd have been fine.
Good.
Exactly.
You'd have been good. Dude, that's funny. So, yeah, no, I agree. I think, for me anyways, all I can say is to anyone going through a tough time, realize that whatever you're going through is actually, like, not that big in comparison to other things. Like I said, I like to not compare myself to Dave Meltzer when things get
or
bad.
Or David Green.
Yeah, but I look at, like, Elon Musk, and I'll be like, dude, look at Elon Musk's problems right now.
Yeah.
This dude has, you know how many He's lawsuits?
He's giving away Teslas, too.
How many lawsuits is Elon Musk in? He's got to be in hundreds and hundreds of lawsuits. You know, like, it's just, it comes with the territory of being known and doing more. You're just going to fail way more publicly, And that's just...
But people will forget faster, too. You know, it heals itself because there's so much of that.
There's so much everywhere.
Exactly. They're like, oh, was that Ryan Pineda 6 months ago? Oh, whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
Mine's stuck.
But that's the thing.
People
a lot
in
of,
San Diego are like, F Dave Meltzer.
It's stuck for 18 years. Yeah, I think... I don't want to make a joke out of it because there's people like, dude, I really hate you, too.
Right.
But it's just like you do have to... like move on and like not take yourself so serious. And I think that part that becomes part of it. It's like when you're so consumed with your own identity and what people think of you, that is what eats people apart. Yeah. And really nobody's thinking about you. That's
no
the other
doubt. There is a gap between who you are and what you want people to think you are. Close that gap.
Yeah. Well, bro, it's always great having you on. Appreciate you sharing some of the wins, the losses, everything else. I think we learned a ton. So guys, go follow Dave, go hit him up on a live, and we'll catch you on the next one. Peace.